Representatives Boyer, Sherry Davis, Grunberg, and myself, Representative Ellis. My apologies to the audience here in Juneau and to those of you who have joined us on teleconference. We were engaged in a tense majority caucus, as they have been for the last few days, trying to work out budget priorities. So I appreciate you all staying with us. The first item on the agenda today is SJR 21, and I'd like to ask the representative from Senator Fahrenkamp's office, the prime sponsor, to come forward. We'll be taking a subcommittee report and final action on SB 138 and House Bill 177, training of foster parents and pre-emancipation aid for minors. And then we'll be conducting our first hearing on HB 155 by Representative Kay Brown, relating to family leave, maternity, and adoption. We plan to accomplish that in the next 40 minutes, so I'd ask everyone to be succinct and to the point in their comments. With that in mind, Joan, good morning, and please go ahead.
Thank you. SJR 21 would show the legislature support.
I'm sorry, could you state your full name?
I'm sorry, Joan Hope. Joan Hope from Senator Fahrenkamp's office. SJR 21 would show the legislature's support for the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation's application for a $500,000 federal grant. If they receive the grant, it will be used to provide assistive technology devices to disabled people. Pat Young from Voc Rehab is here and can better explain what those are. But it's my understanding it's the type of device that helps disabled people in their day-to-day living. It could be anything from a special typewriter for a blind person to a fancy new model of a wheelchair that'll help a person get through mud and tundra. It's a 100% federal grant. No state match funds are required. And I guess that's succinct and to the point. Do you have any questions?
Questions? Representative Boyer.
We're not going to buy any ATVs with this, are we?
Pat would be better able to answer
that.
I don't know.
The tundra and the mud. So
anything further? Representative Grunberg.
We just have a moment to read this because I may have a question. I'm just looking at this for the first time.
Okay.
Is there anybody else to testify on the bill?
I don't believe so, but, well, Pat Young, let's call Pat up. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Pat Young, Deputy Director of Vocational Rehabilitation. The reason that we asked for this legislation to start with, there are going to be 10 grants put out this year as all for the in the United States. We wanted to be one of those 10 because it'll get us up around $500,000 of non-required state match or federal funds for 3 years, and it has 2 renewable years after that to get a program started. The reason this was funded is Public Law 100-407, and there are very little services going in on the majority part of the states for assistive technology devices and services. It's split out that way. The governor designated our division to be the sole recipient of these funds and to develop the program, and that's what we're attempting to do. We thought that it would look very attractive if we could have legislation attached to our grant application saying not only did the governor designate us as the agency, but also that we have the full support of the legislature.
Representative Grunberg?
Let me ask Mr. Young these questions, I think. Does this require any enabling state legislation?
No.
Does it require a state program?
It requires the division to accept and develop a program, yes.
And will that require, see, the thing that I'm concerned about, and Mr. Chairman, I've talked to a number of people about this, is that the federal government's in a habit of mandating services and or providing a carrot by grants and various things, and they suck the state in, and then the federal money goes away, leaving the state holding the bag. Is this such a program?
No, there's no requirement for that. We could refuse it at any time or stop the program at any time.
Okay, also, just a thought, that if this does appear to be a good program, and if there are special technological things, devices, I say things, devices that are of particular assistance uniquely developed for Alaska, I would say that the information and continuing requests for funding could be given to the Governor's Science and Technology Foundation. That would be a group that might also be interested in this. If somebody develops The technology devices that are uniquely suited for Alaska are in the process of doing so. I would think they'd be.
On our task force, sir, we have a member of that committee on our task force.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Involved in that.
Okay. Anything further for Mr. Young or Ms. Hope? If not, thank you both very much. Representative Boyd.
Are you ready for a motion?
Ready.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass out SGR 21 with individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there any discussion of the motion? Without objection, so ordered. I'd like to note for the record that Representative Jackal has joined us. Next item before us is Senate Bill 138, Senator Fisher's legislation mandating training of foster parents. Legislation is reported back from the Foster Care Subcommittee with a recommendation of due pass. The committee substitute that's contained in your packets reflects the only outstanding issue from the last public hearing, which was emergency placements. That has been addressed in a section of the committee substitute to the satisfaction of the sponsor and the division. If that weren't the case, I'm sure someone would speak up. This is the time or forever hold your peace. But I think I'm confident that we've worked that out, and this is good legislation. And I'd entertain I guess we need to adopt the committee substitute. So I'll entertain a motion to adopt the committee substitute for purposes of discussion. Representative Grunberg?
So moved.
Okay. Committee substitute is adopted and before us. Is there further discussion of this item? If not, I'll entertain a motion on final disposition of the bill. Representative Davis?
Move the House committee substitute for Senate Bill 138 HIS with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to the motion? If not, so ordered. I'd like to thank Senator Fisher for bringing this bill before us and for his cooperative attitude with the committee. And we look forward to Senator Fisher's continuing help as we try and work together on this package of foster care bills. And because all of these will be getting, all of the House bills that originated in the House will be coming to the Senate, and we'll be looking for his help and support and trying to address those issues and getting something done on the issue of foster care, because the mandatory training is a big part of that package, and as everyone knows, there are other items we're working on as part of that package, and I appreciate the cooperative attitude that both sides have had in this major project. So thank you very much, and this bill moves on. Next item before us is House Bill 177, Pre-Emancipation Aid for Minors. This legislation is also reported back from subcommittee with due pass. We've established for the record the need for this legislation, and to enhance the viability of the legislation moving through the process, we have adjusted the fiscal note to do away with the vast majority of the money set aside for subsidized independent living. And the rationale is that it will take at least a year for foster children to benefit from this enhancement of services, to gain independent living skills. And there is, or will be, a little bit of money remaining in the subsidy for independent living, enough to fund a small amount of young people so that we can choose the young people most likely to have success in independent living arrangements, so that we establish a track record for this kind of program, and that if it is deemed to be a worthwhile program by the legislature in the future, that the program could be expanded upon. But to enhance this bill's chances of getting through the legislature, we have made that judgment call. And so both the committee substitute and the fiscal note reflect that call. Representative Grunberg.
Do we have a new fiscal note?
That has been provided.
Oh, I see. Yes, okay.
Yes,
the operative note is now the 417-89 fiscal note. Okay. Mr. Chairman, at this time, I would move to incorporate the record on House Bill 412. On this. That was the bill from last year.
Okay. Without objection, so ordered.
Do you want a motion?
We do need a motion to adopt the new committee substitute.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that we adopt the Lauterbach 417 CS for House Bill 177.
there any objection to the motion? If not, that's the item before us. Russ, do you have any comments on things before we move along?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Russ Webb. I'm with the Department of Health and Social Services. I had one comment that I need to bring up to the committee's attention today, and I apologize for failing to note this yesterday when the subcommittee met on this bill. In the committee substitute before you, on page 5, section 3, the language states, the department shall provide appropriate pre-emancipation services to a child 16 years of age or older committed to the department's custody. I think our fiscal note reflects that that, in fact, will not occur. And I would suggest, this was language suggested by Budge Kleinkopf in her testimony, indicating a desire to ensure that the department provided appropriate emancipation services to all children in our custody. And I think it would be our preference, and based on our fiscal note, I think it would be the reality in practice that the department may provide those services, because we simply would not be able to provide it to all children.
But, Russ, isn't it standard operating procedure in state government that, for example, Department of Environmental Conservation is tasked with a lot of obligations that, because of lack of resources, they're not able to live up to? I'm not sure if the legislature does those kinds of things consciously or unconsciously, but is there any harm for there to be a direction to you all to provide services, and then we give you the resources that we deem appropriate, and you do the best you can with the resources available? I mean, it's no different than what we do in other areas, even within the Division of Family and Youth Services.
Well, I understand what the chair is getting at, and in part, I believe that's in fact the case in practice. From a departmental perspective, the shall requires us to provide services to all kids that we find appropriate. And what place the position that wording places us into is finding kids not appropriate for services that we know would be appropriate. Whereas a may would simply mean that we could provide services to all kids with the funding available. It's just a matter of the department being placed in a position of not of finding kids inappropriate when, in fact, we believe them to be appropriate.
Well, it's my personal preference to provide you with the resources necessary to make these services available to all the kids that need them and would benefit from them.
Absolutely, I understand that.
But that's not an option for me this year, so.
Yes, sir, I understand. But I just thought I'd bring it to the committee's attention as a consideration, and it was one, I apologize, it was an oversight on my part yesterday.
Anyone else care to comment? Thank you, Mr. Webb. The committee substitute is before us for further discussion. I'll entertain a motion on the bill. Representative Gall?
I move we pass the bill from committee.
Motion's been made to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations. Is there any objection to the motion? If not, so ordered. Just one further note on the foster care package. House Bill 178 relating to tort liability for the indemnification bill, as it's come to be known, was to have been reported out today. We got some new information from the Division of Risk Management, and we're still doing subcommittee work on that item. Okay. So the indemnification bill will be back before us at a later time, because there are, as you'll note, there still is House Bill 176 creating the advisory Council on Foster Care, and House Bill 19 creating independent foster care review boards that are also being worked on. Just an update, we are yet to resolve the placement of the independent foster care review boards. So we're still wrestling with that and hope to have that settled as soon as we can.
What is your placement?
Placement of the departmental responsibility. Foster care review boards are homeless at the moment. So. Let's move on to House Bill 155, the last item before us today. And if the sponsor, is Representative Brown going to be able to join us this morning?
She's in finance, right? Do we want me to go ahead and other?
Okay.
Do you want us to sign that report?
Did she want to be notified of the?
No.
Okay. Why don't you join us then, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Roxanne Turner. Representative Brown is in finance and they're working on the supplemental. So she can't be here. I think there will be testimony on the need for this legislation and why it's a public policy, so I thought I'd just talk about the major points in the bill. There should be a summary in your bill packet that explains the bill. It allows up to 18 weeks of unpaid leave for childbirth or adoption. And the leave is to be taken consecutively in a single block of time within 12 months after the childbirth or adoption. And it allows up to 18 weeks of unpaid leave within a 24-month period to attend to an ill family member. It requires that an employer reinstate the employee in the same or a substantially similar position after the leave. And it exempts small businesses with fewer than 21 employees. And we made that change in response to information that we received from House Research Agency. There are 6 states with mandated leave policies, and they all have coverage for 21 or more employees. The other major point is that it allows for informal investigation and conciliation of complaints by the Department of Labor. It has a fiscal note from the Department of Labor for $64,000, and most of that goes to the wage and hour investigator, too. Be $51,000 in personal services, $6,000 for statewide travel to investigate complaints, and $5,400 for contractual, and small amounts for supplies and office furniture. Those are the major points, and I'd be glad to talk about the changes from the original and the Labor Commerce CS.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. What I'd like to do is get in the public testimony today because of the people that have been waiting. And then if there's time remaining, we'd have you go through the changes. If not, we'll do that at the start of the next hearing. Thank you for being with us. Our first person signed up to testify is at the Anchorage site, Rosemary Vanderlaan.
Yes, this is Rosemary. I'm the president of the American Association of University Women in the Alaska Division, and we have 300 members who support House Bill 155. We feel that family leave is a positive response to the social and economic reality that the majority of parents, both fathers and mothers, work outside the home. We feel that the scope of the bill has adequate provisions to protect the employer and expressly acknowledges that leave may be unpaid. It's vitally important legislation which will contribute to the protection and the stability of a family. It's a necessary step, we feel, towards helping families find a healthier balance between work and family responsibilities. Responsibilities which for women, as the primary household caregivers, often means taking care of two generations simultaneously, the young and the old. Because of the increasing numbers of single parent, two working parent households, and the young age of our Alaskan population, AAUW believes that it is essential to enact family leave policy. Legislators in the state of Alaska need to acknowledge the changes and the needs of Alaskan families. Every other Western industrialized nation has more generous policies. In total, 75 countries, including many developing nations as well as industrialized countries, except the United States, provide some kind of job-protected maternity leave with some amount of wage replacement. On a personal note, when I talked to International Federation simply cannot believe and they cannot understand that such legislation is not in place in the United States, as the United States is perceived as the leader of the world in equality and freedom. We in Alaska, in AAUW, feel that this bill can be a force in modeling U.S. policy, and we strongly urge adoption of this legislation, as expressed in HB 155. Thank you.
Ms. Bandelon, thank you very much for being with us and for your comments this morning. Let's go to the MATSU site for former Representative Katie Hurley. Katie, good morning. We're happy to welcome you to the Hess Committee, and please go ahead with your comments.
Chairman Ellis, I really wasn't. I just came to listen. I wanted to hear what was going on, and I did not get to hear the first person who spoke down there. It was cutting in and out to see what changes had been made from House Bill 155 or the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute. The Human Rights Commission does support leave for parents, but I'd rather hold off because I haven't had a chance to really check the two bills and send you a staff report later. Is that okay?
That's fine, Katie. Because we were about to, I was afraid we'd run out of time and not get everyone in who'd been sitting through our delay this morning. I wanted to get to the public testimony. I asked Representative Brown's staff person, Roxanne Turner, to hold off on going through the changes from the Labor and Commerce Committee. If the changes weren't that extensive, I probably should have had her go ahead and do that. But in the interest of getting everyone in, let's proceed with the public testimony, and then we'll come back to the changes. I hope you can hang on with us, and hopefully we'll get through all of this before 10 a.m. Our next person...
John, thanks.
Our next person to testify is Maya Oxley in Anchorage, and I'd ask the Anchorage participants or anyone to please make sure you're close to your microphone so you won't cut out and everyone can hear your testimony. So Maya, good morning. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Johnny. This is Maya Oxley at Anchorage. I'm the Executive Director of Child Care Connection. The purpose of Child Care Connection is to increase the supply of quality child care enough to meet the growing demand. Our interest in this bill is primarily because of the relationship between the child care shortage and the availability of parental leave. Anchorage is experiencing what we consider to be a very serious shortage of child care, and most notably in the area of infant care. While passage of this bill won't be a total solution, since many women can't afford a period of unemployment at the birth of a new child, it would be part of a larger and appropriate response to the child care crisis, and I urge you to pass this bill.
Thank you very much. The next participant is Ruth Lister.
Yeah, this is Ruth Lister, and I'm director of the Alaska Women's Commission. I have a longer testimony, which I will send down to you, but I'm just going to shorten it up in the interest of your time here. The Alaska Women's Commission strongly supports House Bill 155. Basic to this bill are the need for parental bonding with infants and the need for parental nurturing of infants and sick children. I think it's a very appropriate bill to be heard in the Hess Committee, and from the ways that you have looked at other legislation, I really look forward to your support of this bill because I really believe this is a family bill, and although it has an impact on the business community, in my testimony I'm going to point out to some of the research that's being done in other parts of the country that points out that the impact in many ways is positive rather than negative. One of the things that I would note, though, initially is that a study by the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging finds that 77% of employed women experienced work and caregiving conflicts that resulted both in cost to themselves and productivity losses to employers. It's necessary to address in a positive way the impact on our family of the increasing number of women in the workforce. Alaska has one of the highest birth rates in the nation, 49% higher than the national average, and we also have the second highest participation rate of females in the workforce. But similar to national statistics, women attain less seniority and earn less money than men. And there's kind of a vicious cycle that's created by the fact that married women earn on average about half of what married men earn, and therefore they're the ones that will take off time to look after a sick child or, of course, an infant. If they don't, if they lose their job or they take leave but they're not able to get back to their own job, then they don't have the job seniority and the promotions that would happen if they had continuity in their job. This bill will do a lot to protect the earning power of women, since many women and children in Alaska live in families that are headed by women, and the increasing povertization of this group is something that we have concern with. This bill will also help in preventing that. There have been several national studies that looked at what private businesses provide, and in fact, many businesses now do provide maternity leave. Unfortunately, it's least frequently provided in the retail, trade, and service industries, which are areas of high female employment. This bill provides for 18 weeks of unpaid leave. I strongly support that length of time, although, of course, the reality is that most women won't take the full 18 weeks, and very few men will take that time, according to studies in states where there already are parental leave policies. Companies with parental leave policies report saving in training and hiring costs, increased employee loyalty, and productivity. Conversely, the productivity of working parents who have infants in daycare tends to be lower, and the cost to government for daycare assistance-eligible parents is very high. Lastly, I just wanted to point out a study by the National Association of Working Women that was recently made, and they compared seven states with parental leave compared with seven states that were considered to be pro-business because of anti-regulatory policies. And the study addressed the question, have small businesses grown more slowly or declined in those states that have mandated a family leave policy? And the results of this study indicate that family leave policies have had no negative effect on job growth in the small business sector. In fact, family leave policies are associated with high job growth in the small business sector. A second finding of the study is the positive association between a high rate of women's labor force participation and the employment growth in all size firms. So in conclusion, I really strongly believe that family leave with job protection will positively impact women's earning ability and job security, will decrease reliance on welfare and other forms of government support, and most importantly, will promote healthy families. Thank you.
Ms. Lister, thank you for your testimony, and we do welcome from you and any other participants written material that can be included in the official committee record on House Bill 155. The last person I have signed up on teleconference, at least, is Joanne Welch.
Yes. My testimony is a personal rather than representing an organization. I was a manager at ARCO Alaska for 7 years. I worked for them for 12. I'm a mother of a 7-year-old son, and I'm a single parent. And I'd like to very strongly indicate my support of this bill. From a personal standpoint, I know the difficulties in trying to maintain a job after the birth of a child. Now, that's both from a physical sense and from an emotional adjustment to the changes that come along with having a child. That says nothing about the needs of the child. That says more about my personal experience of having given birth. I also don't think I'm unique. My experience with other working women is that it's giving birth to a child is certainly a difficult situation that requires a lot of adjustment. I realize also that I'm speaking mainly about maternity leave rather than taking care of elders, but that's the essence of my testimony. From a business standpoint, having been a manager at ARCO, I'd also like to indicate my views on the possibility of not rejecting the needs of business by this particular bill. My experience with ARCO, which we certainly were under the gun from a manager. standpoint of meeting lease sales, and I was particularly involved with exploration. But even in that situation, having managed a staff for almost 7 years, I feel it's entirely possible that this bill not interfere with a healthy business. I think it requires a certain mindset, but and a bit of planning, open-mindedness to new ways of doing things, but I think it's entirely possible. So I guess from both a personal standpoint and a business standpoint, I'd just like to iterate my support of this bill.
Ms. Welch, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else on the teleconference or here in Juneau who would like to testify on House Bill 155? Ms. Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sherry Gull. I represent the Alaska Women's Lobby. And perhaps you can tell me if you have a copy of my testimony at the last committee, in which case I'll just really abbreviate.
I'm not sure if that's in committee members' packets or not.
Oh, that's fine. Okay. In that case, I would just add to the testimony that you've already heard that the Alaska Women's Lobby really supports this piece of legislation. We think it's one of the most pro-family pieces of legislation to come along this year. It's one of our priority issues. We think that it is time that the workplace changed to accommodate the changes in the workforce. Nowadays, most of our families include two people who are employed, and this bill will guarantee job security for people who find that they must take time away from work to care for their newborn, newly adopted, or seriously ill family members. There are 13 other states that provide some sort of job protection like this to new parents, but these protections are very small compared to those protections that are given in other countries in the world, such as Sweden, West Germany, and France, where sometimes workers get 4.5 to 9 months leave with pay of up to 90% of their salary. Again, this is unpaid leave that's being discussed in this bill. We agree with the testimony that you've heard before that businesses that pay attention to family concerns are reaping rewards, and that should be considered and will be learned, I think, if this legislation is to pass. There are already many United States companies and Alaskan companies that provide some sort of parental leave, so it's not an entirely new idea. Also, in the last committee, the number of employees that a business must have in order to fall under this law was extended from 15 to 21. And what that means is that over 88% of Alaskan employers are exempted from this bill. And yet, at the same time, 75% of all Alaskan employees are covered. So we think it's not a radical idea. It's one time has come, and we urge you to consider it favorably.
Ms. Gall, thank you very much. Are there questions for the witness? If not, thank you for being with us. Anyone else? Mr. Sullivan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Harvey Sullivan, and I represent the National Federation of Independent Business, whose members are more than 4,000 strong here in the state of Alaska, small businesses particularly. In recent polls that have been taken of our membership, the question of parental leave, and particularly mandatory parental leave, has been raised, and we have very strong evidence from our polling that more than 84% of the members of our group are violently opposed to the mandate of parental leave in the state. We're particularly concerned and have spent a great deal of time questioning individual members of the organization to determine what their primary concern is. The biggest concern is that it simply is a mandate. You know, they've got nobody screaming and crying about how many employees in a particular company or how many weeks are involved and whether it's paid or unpaid. Simply, the problem is it's another mandate from state level, and it's getting to the point of just not tolerating that anymore. There's been no effort in the course of the last year to encourage parental leave. There's been no effort in the course of the last year to give any incentives to establish programs of parental leave. And quite frankly, the business community is tired of state mandating policies to it. We have offered in the course of this session, this legislative session, to the governor's special assistant for women's issues and the Alaska Women's Commission chairman and other folks the opportunity to sit down and work out some kind of an incentive package. And of course, Mr. Chairman, you're familiar with JTPA programs. There's got to be a way that we can have incentive on the parental leave issue and not mandate this question. And we've not gotten the kind of a positive response that we'd hoped for. There was certainly some indication of a willingness to sit down, but nothing has ever happened. And we've been very much available to do that. I guess another big concern that we have is that we're not National Federation of Independent Business is not taking a position against employees. Quite frankly, we believe that the enactment of this legislation may result in harm to the very class that it intends to protect. Employers who are facing potential loss of certain classes of employees are simply going to stop hiring that class of employees for fear that they're going to just walk away from them after certain necessary and expensive training has occurred. And you're going to see some harm to the people listed that this legislation is intended to protect. That's all I've got.
Mr. Sullivan, thank you very much. Are there questions for the witness? Mr. Sullivan, when you said that employers or suggested that employers just wouldn't hire the kind of people that this legislation is intended to protect, did you mean men and women?
I mean persons who are in a position to potentially take parental or adoptive leave.
Okay.
People of childbearing age or child-rearing age, be it men or women. There will be a certain age class of people who will see a drop in their employment opportunities.
Okay, so you're talking about age discrimination.
I believe
it will
be. As
opposed to any other kind of discrimination.
I believe it will be. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your comments. Yeah. Anyone else? Ms. Turner, could we ask you to come back and run through, or can you do that in 3 minutes, the changes from Labor and Commerce?
There was a change in the title because we deleted some language that in the bill that stated that the employer was not required to provide health insurance coverage for pregnancy, childbirth, or a related medical condition. And the Human Rights Commission was concerned that it violated the Federal Pregnancy Discrimination Act of 1978, which requires health care for pregnancy. So the title is a little different. We have designated the Department of Labor, Title 23, as the enforcement agency. And we have also considered the Human Rights Commission. And there was a lot of discussion in Labor and Commerce. And
Andy.
The consensus of the committee was that Department of Labor could equally do a good job. And we raised the coverage of employers from 15 or more employees to 21 or more. And that was because of the Health Research Agency report. We have a copy of that. The laws in other states. There are some technical changes. I think the most important other changes were in response to some concerns that the Department of Administration had. We decided to make the leave for childbirth or adoption consecutive and to be taken in a single block of time up to 18 weeks and to expire at the end of the 12-month period beginning after the date of the birth or adoption. And the Department of Administration also requested that we make some allowances regarding the temporary transfers of pregnant employees. So we amended the language to transfer a pregnant employee to a suitable position that is existing and unfilled, that is part of the same administrative division in which the employee is presently working. And provide that the employer must first offer the position intended to be filled to the requesting employee before offering it to another person. Those are the major changes.
Are there any questions for Ms. Turner? If not, thank you very much. My plan is to hold this legislation over until Thursday, April 20th. Give members a chance to review it, and I would hope to take action at that time, have some substantive committee discussion, and move the bill along to the next committee of referral. Representative Grunberg.
I'd like to ask Mr. Sullivan a question. What's the minimum number you can live with?
Not a number question.
Mr. Sullivan, could you come back to the teleconference, please?
It's like a subpoena, Max.
No, it's just a friendly question.
Didn't
if
hear,
you prefer. If you'd prefer.
Mr. Grunberg's comment, I'm not hearing anything.
Mr. Sullivan just approached and he asked me if this was like a subpoena. And I said, no, it was a friendly question. He didn't have to answer if he didn't want it.
Well, Representative Grunberg, through the chair, I don't believe that our members think it's a number question. It's not a matter of whether you got 6 employees or 21 employees or 210 employees. It's a matter of it being a mandated policy. And, you know, our members, like all small business members, are you know, always subject to incredible amount of bureaucracy and red tape and paperwork. And it's just another stick approach instead of a carrot approach. There's no incentive in this program. You know, what is the state going to do for an employer who institutes a policy? Nothing. Not going to do a thing for them. Where's the incentive?
I think I'll explore that at our next meeting, and I hope you'll be back, because I know I'm going to have a few more questions and no subpoena.
Mr. Sullivan, finally, could you tell us how many of the businesses that make up your organization here in Alaska would be affected by the new Labor and Commerce Committee substitute that exempts businesses with fewer than 21 employees?
I'd have to get back to you on that issue, Mr. Chairman, and just as an aside to that, I don't believe that the number of 21 employees would be a constant number, even if it were associated with the bill this year. Unfortunately, once that door is open, that number will change. But I will be glad to come back to you on Thursday with numbers of the affected employees.
Mr. Sullivan, I was troubled when your predecessor would come before the committee in the last 2 years, and now with your presentation of the use of the survey of your members on broad sweeping questions to substantiate a position on very specific policy proposals. And I think the information you present is very useful to us in broad generalizations, but we've never been able to really pin down a lot of things. I mean, it's not been presented to your membership, this proposal, and I know that's difficult to do. In your surveys, you may conduct an annual survey, but it's useful to the extent that it's a broad general expression of opinion. It would help if your membership could express themselves more specifically about some of these things, and then we'd get a better feel for it. On this question, I think, you know, most of your membership's been exempted under the new proposal, and maybe you can pin down for us for the next meeting just what percentage of your membership would be exempt from this requirement.
Mr. Chairman, I'll do as much of that as I can in that 2-day time frame,
sure.
Believe me. As far as specifics on the question, we don't always, in front of the committees, quote all of the wording in all of the questions asked of the employers, nor do we go into all of the background necessarily that we use in our survey information when we've asked them to answer the various questions. On the particular issue of parental leave, 3 questions were asked of employers. One was, should Alaska employers be required to provide parental leave to employees? Yes, 9%. No, 84%. Undecided, 7%. Second question, do you currently provide such leave to A, mothers only? 13% said yes. B, either parent? 2% said yes. C, no, 46%. Unaware, 19%. So there's certainly more than just me coming up and saying 84%. I mean, there's a little bit more to it than that. And background data that goes with that.
I'd like you to provide us a written copy of those materials so we can include that.
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further? If not, if there's no further business to come before us, I will adjourn the meeting at 10:02 a.m.